the Strip, and I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer of the Las Vegas Sun, here to get you caught up on all the news and fun this week from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip. We've got a lot to talk about this week. Some pretty crazy stuff has been happening in music and nightlife and food. So I'm bringing in an expert on all three of those subjects. Las Vegas Weekly staff writer Leslie Ventura is back to help sort through all the Vegas madness. Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks for having me.
So I think we have to start with Madonna because her shows at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace were generating lots of buzz all weekend long, not necessarily in a good way. So Madonna's Madame X tour was scheduled for three Vegas shows, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday at Caesars. Early last week, at some point, the advertised start time of 8:30 p.m. was pushed back to 10:30 p.m., which is the latest start time for a show I've ever heard of at the Coliseum.
Yeah.
Maybe of all time. Of course, there were some ticket holders who were not aware of that change when they arrived for that first of the three concerts Thursday night. If you combine that with the fact that no phones were allowed at these shows, you had to deposit your phone in a pouch so it couldn't be used at all during the concert. You've clearly got a recipe for disaster between those two things.
Yeah, especially, you know, a rowdy crowd in Vegas drinking.
Right. So Madonna finally took the stage, I guess, just after midnight. So technically Thursday's show started early on Friday, and many fans were not happy about it. I was not there, but longtime Las Vegas Weekly music and arts writer Josh Bell was in the building, and you can see his review of that first Madonna show at LasVegasWeekly.com. Leslie, I don't know about you, but if I was there, I don't think anything could save that from being a really bad concert experience.
Yeah, you know, I'd be pretty upset. I can't imagine, I mean, if my favorite band of all time went on that late, I would probably still stick it out, but I'd be really frustrated for sure. I think I pulled up Josh Bell's story, and I think my favorite part in his piece was where the crowd was clearly not happy, and they weren't giving her, you know, the love I think she expected. And she said, "I still love you in spite of your hostility." And I think that just sums it up perfectly. I kind of do wish I would have been there, even though it went on so late. Just because I would have loved to have just seen and experienced the madness for myself.
Yeah, me too, maybe. I don't know. At this point in my, like, show-going career, I have mixed feelings when I read about, like, just something crazy like that happened, because I want to be there for those things, to feel them in person, but it does sound like it would really suck. Especially to not have a phone, I think.
That's right.
Must have driven people crazy.
Yeah, I mean, this was maybe better and more appealing to read about it the next day.
Maybe. And Josh is a very measured writer. He can be harsh for sure, but he's always pretty fair. And he also wrote that, you know, Madonna's most devoted fans were ultimately rewarded and seemed pretty happy at the end of the show Thursday night. Again, go read his review at LasVegasWeekly.com. Other reports from over the weekend had Madonna taking the stage much closer to the planned 10:30 time slot on the other two nights. Now, anytime an artist of her stature comes to town, and especially if it's a multi-night engagement like this one, I think it's natural to wonder if it's sort of a tryout for a Strip residency. This sort of already happened this year with Keith Urban, who reopened the Coliseum in September and has since announced a ton of dates for next year at that venue. But I don't really think anyone was considering Madonna for a Vegas residency at this stage of her career, because she's clearly still focused on doing her thing and making music and performing and touring on her own terms. And I think any artist has to make some concessions and probably some sacrifices if they're going to come to the Strip and do the residency thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think people were hopeful. Like, for example, Lady Gaga, I mean, I guess she has her sort of regular recording career on hold right now. But, you know, if she can do it, anyone can. So maybe the hope was that if Madonna is kind of coming here for three shows, maybe she's doing a little, like, trial run. Doesn't seem like that.
Probably not.
Yeah, but...
she still can make the headlines, that's for sure.
Absolutely. She's great at doing that.
Well, I think a big part of the Vegas thing is that, you know, and she probably isn't seeing this in the other places where she goes on tour, maybe a few cities, but, like, so many people come to Las Vegas. So many people came this weekend just to see Madonna.
Right.
You know, who knows what else they did while they were in Las Vegas, but they bought a ticket and jumped on a plane to come see Madonna in Vegas. And I do think that puts a little bit different expectation, just in general, just the general audience expectation is probably different for her show here than it would be in Chicago or LA or any other place. And that brings us to Aerosmith, because you and I were sitting right next to each other at opening night of yes. Aerosmith's residency at Park Theater in April mm-hmm. this year. And that was an interesting experience. There were some riled up fans at that one too while we were waiting for the show to get going. But just judging from that first show, I would have initially, you know, like the day after, I totally would have put Aerosmith in that Madonna category of like uncompromising artistry. We're doing the show that we want to mm-hmm. do. But their show has been hugely successful
this whole
year, and they've got a ton more dates coming up too. What did you notice when you went back to see Aerosmith this fall?
Yeah, so I mean, largely they make changes, I think, and have definitely made changes, but they haven't overhauled anything. I kind of got this feeling the first time I saw them, and it definitely rang true when I saw them the second time, that it is just a intimate concert experience. So it's going to change every night you go. You're going to get a completely different experience, and it's rock and roll. Mm-hmm. So it's not going, it's kind of like fly by the seat of your pants. There are no rules, but because it's Aerosmith and they are extremely professional and they are viewing it as, you know, this is a very tried and true Vegas residency, they're still going to like work within the confines of, you know, delivering top-notch entertainment, mm-hmm. but it's still a little different in that, you know, you're going to get a different set list every night, which I think is really cool. I think that provides a completely different experience for Las Vegans and for Aerosmith fans. And it's cool too, like you said, for people just flying in just to see Aerosmith. It doesn't really matter who you are. You're going to get something new every night. So
yeah. And I think I agree with you. I think being a rock band is a big part of that. When we have pop stars come in and create these big production shows around their music, like a Gwen Stefani mm-hmm. or Christina Aguilera or that type of thing, in the Britney or Celine mold, you don't really think that you're going to get surprises or guest right. performers or any of that stuff. And you don't, you know, there's probably not a lot of song changes from mm-hmm. show to show. Mm-hmm. But I think that people do expect that from a rock band, whether it's Aerosmith, whether it's Journey at the Coliseum.
Right.
Because it's rock, you're waiting to see what's going to happen next, and it's supposed to be a little bit unpredictable.
Yeah, and I think that's why I like it so much. From the first time when on opening night when we saw it together, and you know there were a few like things that they needed to work through, which I think that they totally did. To the second time, you know, they had really kind of like polished this thing, and they ended up throwing Johnny Depp up on stage, you know, at the end of the night, and I'm just sitting there like, oh my God, like this is such a true Vegas moment to be witnessing like Steven Tyler and Johnny Depp together playing Toys in the Attic. And I think it's really cool too, having a band like Aerosmith here affords other touring musicians to tap into that. So when I saw Paul McCartney a few months ago, he brought Steven Tyler up on stage. Mm-hmm. And so it's just really cool to see like what people are doing when they come to Las Vegas, specifically come to the Park MGM, and like how they work with the talent that's also like already here. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really exciting time.
Yeah, there's a lot of jumping on stage happening yes. at Park MGM these days. I don't know if you yeah. saw, but you know, Lady Gaga just closed out another run over the weekend, and the last night of her jazz and piano show. She went over to Nomad.
Oh, my God.
Played with Brian Newman again at that late night show. And Robbie Krieger from The Doors was with her and joined her and played a couple of songs on guitar.
I did not see that.
That's nobody saw that guest star coming. That was kind of out of nowhere.
That's nuts. Mm-hmm. And that it's stuff like that. I mean, yeah, it really does make me like love living here. And it does make me want to go to everything because, you know, it's that whole, what is it called? FOMO, the fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't get that anywhere else like you do in Vegas.
That's a good point. We're the capital of FOMO. You wrote a new feature on Aerosmith that everybody should go read right now at LasVegasSun.com. And the band is back at Park Theater this week on the 14th, 16th, and 19th, and has more shows in November and December. On to nightlife, where everybody already knows what the big Vegas story is. Chaos at the Palms has closed after only 7 months, I think, of existence. And just days after it had reopened with the Chaos Dome in place, which was supposed to keep the pool party going all winter long in an enclosed, climate-controlled environment. The club closure was announced last week during a Red Rock Resorts quarterly earnings call. Red Rock Resorts is, of course, the parent company of Station Casinos and the owner of the Palms and the spender of $690 million for the renovation of the off-strip property. Massive project, which was just completed months ago. Essentially, Chaos was too expensive to live. The management said on that earnings call that it paid $28 million in the third quarter of this year to end long-term agreements with resident DJs and other artists at Chaos, and that they plan to make similar payments over the next two quarters. So that clearly does not pencil out. I want to say it was a big surprise that the Palms would close this new mega club, but we already knew that many of the executives who had a hand in the resort's refreshed nightlife scene have left or been dismissed in recent months, including general manager John Gray. Leslie, you are one of the first to report on this closure. Yes. What was your initial reaction to this very sudden news?
I mean, shocked but not shocked at the same time. You know, it's always upsetting to see something, such a huge project, not work out. And then also you think of like all of the people who are working there and how it affects them. So it's a huge bummer to put it lightly. Mm-hmm. But again, yeah, not that surprising considering, you know, what you just said and all the monetary losses. I think the biggest surprise is that it just happened 6 days after they reopened, and spent more money adding the dome. And I think, you know, they are going to obviously keep pool operations open, so the dome could still pay off and could still, you know, they're still going to use that space. But, you know, it's a horrible shame considering everything that went into it.
Yeah, it sucks. Of course, Chaos had really big names on its roster like Marshmello, Cardi B, J Balvin, and Deadmau5, among others. And all clubs pay a lot of money for their top flight talent. But in Vegas, we've seen the trend moving away from using that talent as the main draw. I think I'm most disappointed because we didn't get to see, like you just mentioned, we really didn't get to see how Chaos would affect the club scene.
Right.
It wasn't around long enough, and how it might have been able to change some of those trends, even slightly. I really was looking forward to what that experience would be to have an indoor pool party under that dome and see if that could kind of be the next big thing in the day club scene. We do have Encore Beach Club to kind of explore that. They're doing a Saturday party called Intermission, which runs during the day from 2 to 10 p.m., and that is also under a temporary enclosure. But I actually stopped by both of these properties in the last week. I haven't had a chance to party there like I would like to, but just to scope out what they look like, and they're both pretty impressive. The Chaos Dome is a much more significant structure.
It looks really beautiful. I haven't seen it myself, but just in the photos that I've seen, it looks,
it's pretty awesome. It's pretty impressive. And like you said, they are using it as a resort pool now. Mm-hmm. So hotel guests can access it during the week and on the weekends. Apparently, you can buy a cabana or a table and go in there even without a hotel room. But,
oh, cool.
I'm not sure what the price of that is. I don't think they're sure what the price of that is right now. They're just kind of figuring things out. I would be very surprised if we didn't see some incredible private events happening in there throughout the winter, as well as they got to grab somebody and throw them in the indoor portion of Chaos for New Year's Eve, right?
I mean, you'd think you can't just leave that space like sitting there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it's too massive.
Yeah.
And there's still so many opportunities there, especially like you said on New Year's to throw just an awesome bash. So
yeah, I don't think we've seen the last of Chaos. How about that?
I hope so. Or I hope not, rather.
Okay, a couple of interesting restaurant developments. The Sun reported last week that Carnegie Deli at the Mirage is going to be closing in February. One of the longest standing restaurants at that property, of course, an outpost of the famous New York deli that closed, I think, a couple of years ago now. The original closed in New York City. Brian Horwath at The Sun followed up with the Carnegie Company and found out that they are looking for another strip location. So hopefully we won't have to go without that pastrami for too long. And then this week, this is what we are excited about. Aria announced that Din Tai Fung, a restaurant we love, is going to be coming next year and taking over the rather large space that the Aria Cafe is operating in now. The cafe is going to close in February, and this awesome Chinese restaurant is going to open. Now, I went to Din Tai Fung for the first time and only time in Shanghai a couple of years ago.
So
you've been
cool.
to the one in LA, right?
Yeah, there's actually a few in LA, and I went to one that was inside, I forget what it's called, but it's this like really big outdoor mall. And the name of it is slipping me. But yeah, I just went a few months ago, and it was amazing, but definitely not, you know, the real deal experience that you had. Tell us about that.
It was in this mega mall. It was like this multi-story. It was just crazy. I've never seen a mall like that before. We kind of got lost in there trying to find the restaurant, but just very, I don't think I've ever had an experience, even in Las Vegas, that was like luxurious and super casual at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Like, it is affordable. The food is amazing. And we were talking about this earlier. I love the fact that they have these like open windows so you can see like everyone behind the scenes, like making the dumplings. And the one in LA at least had a wait, like an hour plus wait every time we tried to go, like lunch and dinner. And then we ended up going the next day in the morning for breakfast because that's how, and we still waited like 20 or 30 minutes at like 10 in the morning. I mean, this place just has such a high demand.
Yeah. This is a huge company. They have restaurants, 170 restaurants in 13 different countries.
Wow.
It's kind of crazy that they haven't already, they don't have a spot on the strip already.
Right. Well, and when I saw that Tim Hwan was opening, you know, obviously there's going to be major comparisons to the two, I think. But that was kind of my first thought that like, oh, Din Tai Fung isn't here. And then we were just talking about it last week.
That's right.
That we really wished one would open, and then our wish was granted.
Our dumpling dreams are coming true. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Maybe we will not be able to go to pool parties next summer at Chaos, but instead we'll just go eat dumplings.
Yes, I'm okay with that.
Brunch instead of pool.
Then I don't have to worry about my summer bod. I can just have a dumpling bod, and that's okay.
I already have a dumpling bod. Leslie, thanks for your time
today. Thanks for having me.
I got more show news. This is the last week for the 11-year strong Donnie and Marie residency show at the Flamingo. Final performance is set for Saturday night in the Donnie and Marie showroom, of course. I will be there, so hopefully I'll have something special for you next week, a little glimpse of strip entertainment history going down. This show was originally a six-week engagement, and it did so well and was so much fun. The singing siblings were signed on for a longer term and a longer one and a longer one, and now it's certainly been one of the most successful shows of the modern era at this most iconic strip casino. Congratulations to both of these incredibly talented entertainers. Hopefully they'll be back on the strip before too long. Not surprisingly, Encore Theater and AEG have added some more shows from Robbie Williams. He sold out 16 shows at Encore Theater this year and will play at least 8 more in 2020 in March and April. Tickets go on sale November 21st. I'd put some money on more Robbie at Wynn next summer as well. Jerry Seinfeld has been huge at the Coliseum for years, and he's added 4 shows in 2020, April 3rd and 4th, and May 15th and 16th. Tickets are on sale November 15th, which is this Friday. Michael Bublé is coming back to Vegas at T-Mobile Arena on May 9th, and tickets go on sale November 18th. Why don't we have a Bublé residency that has required Christmas time dates? Who is running this place? And the Las Vegas Rock and Roll Marathon is taking over the strip this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. Saturday is the 5K race starting at the Las Vegas Festival Grounds at Sahara and Las Vegas Boulevard and culminating with a concert from Kesha. Sunday is the 10K, the marathon, and the half marathon starting from the same spot. And much of the strip will be close to vehicle traffic early on that day. It was also just announced that the marathon will add a second springtime race in 2021. My one big show this week is Fleetwood Mac at T-Mobile Arena Saturday night. This is the final show of the band's Epic World Tour launched last year. It was probably my favorite concert experience of 2018 in this same building on the strip. So this is your last chance to catch this particular show from this specific lineup of Fleetwood Mac. You can find more weekend entertainment options every Friday in my Best Bets column at lasvegassun.com. That is going to do it for this episode of The Sun on the Strip. Please consider adding this show to your regular podcast roster by subscribing at Apple Podcasts. And I would love it if you feel like leaving a rating and a review so more people can discover the show. You can also find past episodes at lasvegassun.com/podcasts. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week.